Episode 191.
We take that for granted. Professional technicians just don't repair cars and trucks. They make the highway safer for each and every one of us that go up and down the road every day. I tell people our industry doesn't have a career ladder. It has a career lattice. And once you earn the foundational skills, you can go just about anywhere.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to On Point from Remarkable Results Radio, and a special interview from an auto care industry professional.
On Point.
Hey, aftermarketers, Carm Capriotto here, and you're listening to the Remarkable Results Radio podcast. You're in the aftermarket's content paradise, where ideas, insights, and trends is served up twice a week. Hey, today I'm with George Arends in episode 191. Always see the show notes at remarkableresults.biz/E191 for in-depth coverage on this episode. Now, this episode is made possible through the sponsorship of Federal Mogul Motor Parts. They are the reason you enjoy these interviews twice per week. When you need innovation and quality, you need Federal Mogul Motor Parts. With brands like Moog, Felpro, Wagner Brake, Anco, Champion, Seal Power, FP Diesel, and more. They're the Parts Techs Trust. Find out more at fmmotorparts.com. Hey, thanks to new Facebook fans, Adam Liu, Craig Zale, Jerry Kaminsky, and Bob Orr, and to new LinkedIn connections, Chris Coleman, Dave Campbell, Robert Medeiros, and Carl Toops. Stay engaged with the podcast on social media, and thanks. Hey, if you've not had a chance to watch a Town Hall Live program, then you're missing another important aftermarket resource. Every Friday at 12 noon Eastern, we hold a forum of your peers to discuss one topic. Now, if you missed any one of them so far, go to remarkableresults.biz/live and watch the replays. Here's how you need to think about the town hall. Watch it like a documentary and get the impact from the show in the form of a seminar. My guests have paid forward their greatest expertise for you. The town halls are an important piece of your forever learning strategy. And when you watch them on YouTube, if you stop and you go back, it picks right up where you left off. So I know you can really enjoy getting the uptake. Now, meet George Arends, who is the Director of Training and Recruitment for the Wheel Time Network. George is also an automotive education consultant specializing in NATEF ASE accreditation. He works with instructors and administrators to develop partnerships with local businesses and industry through the program's advisory committees. Now, he has a strong message about advisory committees, and George is a big advocate for secondary and post-secondary vocational advisory councils. And if that wasn't enough, George also chairs the Technology and Maintenance Council's Super Tech Competition for the Future Technicians Skill Competition. He says Super Tech is Skills USA for big kids. We also talk technician shortage and the real need for technicians in the industry over the next 10 years because of attrition, among many other reasons. Now listen to a very passionate and wise man. Here's George Arends. A warm welcome to George Arends from Wheel Time University. George, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You are in the trucking industry, and you work at Wheel Time University. You are a member of ATMC,
yep.
An award winner. You also are involved with NACAT, with NATEF, with AES. I think some of the wisdom that you're going to bring to the podcast is really going to benefit our listeners. So, one of the things that I loved that you were doing for NACAT, and I think it was this past summer, is you held a conference on how to select and recruit a good advisory board. Am I right?
That's correct. How to develop an effective advisory committee.
Great. Can we talk about that in a few minutes?
Sure.
First, how'd you get into this great industry of ours?
It was interesting. When I was in high school, one of my good friends decided to go to the county VOTEC, and he took up auto collision. And he would come home on days, and we'd all be doing either hockey or something in the street or hanging out. And he'd be mouthing off or talking about different things on a car and this and that and this and that. And he was kind of a storyteller to start with. So I started doing the research to see if he was pulling our legs or actually telling the truth. And when I started doing that, I kind of got interested in cars myself. And so basically, he kind of pulled me in and I started tinkering with him and tinkering in the driveway and taking things apart. And then another friend who I met through Boy Scouts, he was a tinkerer. And next thing you know, I decided that's what I'm going to do for a living and got my first job at an Exxon station in North Brunswick, New Jersey. And the rest is history.
And the rest is history. Just quickly, like in 1 minute, all the different jobs you've had up until today.
Technician, teacher, recruiter, consultant, accident investigation, softball player.
Interesting.
I chair TMC SuperTech, been involved in Skills USA, been contest judge, worked for Wheel Time to develop training, different types of recruitment. Do some stuff with Steve Johnson, who races pro stock motorcycle, help him with some of his marketing and his school program. He does a lot of stuff with schools on branding them themselves after the diploma. So, yeah.
You know what I think is interesting is here's a guy who started out to be a tech and you branched out in so many different ways. It's enlightening to know that you've been able to contribute to the industry, but always seem to find your level or way. Was it that you were changing your levels of interest, or were people pulling you and says, "Hey, come on over here and do this for us"?
A little bit of both. I tell people our industry doesn't have a career ladder; it has a career lattice. And once you earn the foundational skills, you can go just about anywhere. I mean, there's folks right now that own car dealerships that started, you know, sweeping the floor. And just like myself, I started working as a mechanic in an Exxon station and over the years worked my way through the career and some people saw some things in me and I happened to be in the right place at the right time for some of these things. And it just took me in different avenues and some were great experiences, some were less than great, but each time I learned something.
You know, the technician shortage is such an over and over and over, and we keep talking about it. And out of the 4 million people that work in our industry, there are 4 million opinions.
Yes, there is. 4 million and one.
Of how to solve it.
It's just like the word curriculum. You ask 20 people what the definition of curriculum is, you get 21 answers. So it's the same thing. We talk about the shortage and like I tell or ask industry, when we're talking about a shortage, be specific. Do you have a shortage of applicants or do you have a shortage of qualified applicants? And 100% of the time, it's qualified applicants. That's a different problem. I was just on the phone today with a friend who's a training guy at Great Dane Trailers, and we were having the same conversation. And I said, now, wait a minute. Do your locations have a lack of applicants or qualified applicants? And he said, George, it's qualified applicants. I said, that's a different problem. So we have young people interested in our industry. For some reason, they're not coming out the other end of the pipe the way we want them.
And they're going other places or they're just giving up?
A little bit of both. So as I usually say, some of the problem is what education is teaching isn't what industry needs. But I'm not blaming education. We spoke in front of about 800 or 900 people at TMC, and we were speaking on this subject. And I asked the people in the audience, how many of you are involved in your local auto or medium heavy duty truck advisory committee? And about 36 hands went up. I said, the rest of you, you're part of the problem. This is your industry. And you're looking for technicians, but you're not willing to get involved in your own local program to let them know what they need to train them properly to come to work for you.
This is a watershed moment right now. I'd like to think that this is the bestest new idea ever invented, but it's not. Actually, we've been chatting about that in the shows that I've done. It comes up monthly.
All the time.
Okay. So you're at NACAT. You've got all these, I think, high school and post-secondary teachers, right?
Sure.
In the conference. It's a great conference, Bill Haas. And
great guy.
And so how, and he was on the show. He's got a great episode all about NACAT. What are you telling the instructors and the department heads to do?
Well, I'm telling them or teaching them that if you're going to have a meeting, especially a meeting with industry, we've all sat in a meeting that when the meeting was over, we walked out and went, well, that was a waste of my time, or they should have sent an email. Well, the problem is these advisory committees are just like that. We ask industry to come in, and then we basically don't ask them for their opinion. We tell them all the things that we're doing as education, feed them a cold lunch and say, thank you very much, and check the box. And which is wrong. They're our customer, and we're supposed to be asking them what they need. And also, they're the taxpayer, both personally and professionally. We're spending their money. So shouldn't we be asking them how they would like us to spend the money and if that's the right piece of equipment to buy, or is that a good investment in training aids, or are we just throwing good money after bad?
So you're really saying it's a combination of the schools not really appreciating the value that the advisory board brings. But if I was an industry person, and by the way, I did serve for a bunch of years on our local community, when the industry sits down and is investing their time at one of these meetings, shame on the industry for not saying, hey, you got to listen to me. This is what we need to have done. So I guess it's a two-way street, yes?
I agree. And what I tell people is this is a national concern with a local solution. And the local solution is get involved. And through TMC, we've been talking to a lot of our members that not only when you get to the meeting, attend the meeting, but make sure that your voice is heard. If the subject matter doesn't come up in the agenda or in the conversation, you bring it up. Say, hold it. It's not really important to us to know what you're teaching as much as it should be important to you to ask us what we need to make these young people employable. And that's the problem. The agendas are sometimes set by the educators who I don't blame them. Nobody ever taught them how to run a meeting. Somebody just told them you need to have a meeting and invite some industry folks and let's check the box. So the problem is everybody in general, if you don't know how to set up a meeting, but more importantly, before you set up a meeting, you have to have measurable outcomes. These are the things I expect to accomplish in this meeting, and then work backwards to the agenda. So if there's no measurable outcomes, then why did you call the meeting in the first place? You wasted a bunch of people's time. So part of what I do is teach them not only how to recruit members, which that's real important, because when I ask schools if they have an advisory committee, a lot of them say no. And I ask why. And a lot of times what comes out of their mouth is there's nobody to serve. And then my response is, then why do we need your program? Scares the heck out of them every time. Because if there's nobody to serve on the committee, then obviously there's no need for your program. And so they back up and go, no, that's not what I said. I said, that's what I heard.
Yeah. Yeah, you're obviously the graduates are working somewhere. Let's find out where.
Well, and if you're a NATEF accredited school, that's part of the process for you to keep track of your graduates in standard 1 and then standard 5.4 and then again in standard 6.3. And so if you're doing the things that you're supposed to be doing and following up on your customers, then you're able to get feedback from those young people to make program improvements. And there's probably not an instructor in this country that doesn't have former students that come back and visit them or nowadays call them on the phone. And I tell people, I haven't been in the classroom in 20 years, but I have no less than 15 former students on a cell phone. And I didn't even have a cell phone when I left teaching. So if I can find my former students from 20 years ago, I gotta believe you can find yours a lot easier than me if you're still an active instructor. And graduates are probably key advisory committee members because they're the true checks and balances. They've actually been through your program, and now they're in industry, and they can tell you what was relevant, what wasn't, but more importantly, if there were any gaps in the training that made it difficult for them to transition into the industry or certain skill sets that their employer wanted that they didn't have, that employer had to invest extra money into that individual to make them productive.
I'm talking with Anthony Frohwine, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. What are the techs saying about your visit?
Every single time that I set up a training, I try to position the van inside the shop. You know, you're part of their house at that point. Whenever you set aside that time, you tell them that you're coming in, you're providing a lunch, and you're really bringing something of meat and value to the table. Once they get a taste of it, really, by the time you're done, they're asking, when can you come back?
When can you come back? Or, hey, what else you got in your bag of tricks?
Exactly. Exactly.
So the greatest outcome of your visit to a professional shop?
Is just to really make a difference in their everyday procedures to maximize the premium end of the product that's being installed. But ultimately, for me being a next shop owner as well, is to maximize their profitability in installing the part right the first time and having a happy customer. I always say a happy customer is like a happy wife. Happy wife, happy life. Same thing goes with the customer.
I've heard that before. So you take a Wagner OEX pad and you put it into the hands of a technician. What happens?
First off, they're floored with the cut design on the front end. They'd never seen a brake pad like this before. And then you start to break it down into why it's cut the way it is and how it's application or platform specific, how the backing plates are no longer painted, they're zinc coated, and that's for tolerance level, so that way you don't have buildup on the ears and fitting into the hardware. I mean, you get into all the little nuances that they've changed around with that brake pad on top of the performance end of it. I mean, it's phenomenal. And then once they physically try the brake pad, either on a customer's car or their own vehicle, I've heard nothing but rave reviews about the brake pad.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. Okay, so you're at NACAP this past summer, and you do your thing, and you're involved in what's going on in the networking and the side banter. To me, there's so much value in that.
Yep.
And so you're all done, and you're going out. You drop your big ear, and you're starting to listen to what they thought of, you know, your level of motivation, your story.
Right.
What are you hearing the instructors saying that they really need?
Really what I hear is they never thought of it that way. They didn't realize that it could be done that simple. And I guess nobody actually ever sat down and explained to them the options and the way things can be done. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times an administrator just tells an educator, go do that. They don't tell them how to do that. They don't give them the resources to get it done. They just say, go do it. Just like many schools, the instructor is told to get the program NATEF accredited. Well, it's an instructor involvement, administration involvement, and advisory committee. It's not just the instructor, but somebody's passing the buck and saying, do it.
So the NATEF certification really drags in that advisory panel.
It's the cornerstone of the process. It truly is.
Okay, we've talked on the show so many times before. We've just said, hey, if you're listening to the show and you're an entrepreneur, business owner, if you're a technician, if you've gone through school, knock on the door of your local VOTEC, both at the high school and post-secondary?
High school and community college level. And what I tell people is find the CTE, the Career and Technical Education, Technology and Education, Educator, Coordinator or Director. You want to find the administrator that's over all of CTE.
Okay.
And ask them, when is your next advisory committee meeting? I would like to be part of the committee. and start with them. As the administrator, they should know when the committees are. And if there aren't committee meetings, then that's a red flag in itself. And unfortunately, there are a lot of schools and a lot of programs that still don't have advisory committees. It's sad.
That is so surprising to me.
I would be that surprised. I'm not that surprised.
All right, what's the percentage?
I would say of automotive programs or of all of CTE?
Break it down, automotive and then heavy.
All of CTE, which would be construction, which could be cosmetology, could be auto, diesel, collision. I would say less than 50% have an active advisory committee with meaningful advisory committee minutes. I know some college programs that haven't had a physical meeting in years. Yep. And I guess it's because, let's see, how did they put it once? Is I don't want industry in my business. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that. And I'm sitting there going, you got to be kidding. It's not your business. But that's the way they think, and it's unfortunate. And that's part of the problem.
What I find interesting is that if you go and talk to the accounting majors, mm-hmm. or if you go to the marketing department or the arts department, how else are they getting their students jobs or careers if they weren't reaching out to industry?
Who knows? You know, what does the career services or the placement at a community college really do? And I know when somebody hears this, they're going to have a cow. But what do they really do? Does that department go out every day and solicit employers and find industry people, whether it's accounting, whether it's marketing, whether it's automotive or underwater basket weaving? Do they go out every day and look for new employers that have opportunities for their students and graduates? And I'll tell you, no. The college that NACAT was at last year, I did a presentation for them in January on advisory committees. But what I asked is 3 months before, I asked for all the previous advisory committee minutes of all of the programs at that campus. And then I read them. And then I sat through some of their advisory committees in areas that were unrelated to me. And it was truly amazing that even when things came to the surface with business and industry, nobody jumped on to grab that piece of information or grab what that industry person was saying to make a difference. So I unfortunately, and I know I'm going to get scolded for this, some people just have the advisory committee meetings to check that box that says we did it. That's sad.
Well, thanks for diving into this for us, because we're talking about it, we're highlighting it, but I really think you ground it for us because you're so darn close to it, and thank you for being close to it, and thank you for being such an advocate. And can I put your email in the show notes in
sure.
case anyone wants to pick up the phone and or email
sure.
you and say, hey, can you come in, you know, help us
yep.
get this thing started? Okay, great.
And let's use my other email address, my personal email address,
okay.
so that all doesn't get bombarded at the Wheel Time email.
No problem.
And I usually gauge my presentations, honestly. When I'm done, up on the board, you'll see my name, my phone number, and my email address. And if they want a copy of my presentation, you know, they have to email me. And I can tell you, within the next 30 to minutes to an hour after my presentation, my inbox is usually flooded with people that want information. So that's my litmus test that people are actually listening and are interested in what I am saying and want to make a better committee for their program. And once they have the information, they really do want to do the right thing. They just don't know where to start.
Well, thank you for all of that. That was just inspiring. Thanks. ATMC award winner in all the work you've done with Wheel Time University. Pick a great example out of how you were recognized and give us a quick overview.
The Wheel Time University was recognized. The Wheel Time Network, we are a member organization of all the Detroit Diesel and Allison distributors in the United States and Canada.
All right.
So we're Clark Power Systems, W.W. Williams, Wajax, Stewart & Stevenson, all over the United States and Canada. And traditionally, we were Detroit Diesel and Allison Repair, and a lot of our members have branched out into other avenues, but now we are into total coach and truck repair. And with that, we have to train our technicians in all other aspects of the truck. So I was hired by Mike Delaney, the CEO, to create a Wheel Time University to prepare our technicians to take the T2 through the T8 ASE tests. So we created an online university with an assessment, training, and ASE test prep, and then we followed it up with instructor-led training in specific areas. And our goal is to work on potentially getting a high percentage of our 3,500 over-the-road techs ASE certified in one or more areas.
Now, when you say 3,500 techs, are those members of Wheel Time University?
Well, no, those are technicians that work for our members.
Okay. All right.
Right. And some of our members are, you know, two shifts, you know, a day. I think some of them actually run three shifts a day. So there's a large number of technicians. They have on-road, off-road, power generation, but we're focusing on the on-road folks.
Well, that's great. And you also said SuperTech was one of your babies, right?
I missed a meeting I wasn't invited to and got voluntold to run a competition that didn't exist. So there you go.
I love that. Voluntold.
That's it.
You know what? I've been around a long time. It's the first time I've ever heard that one. Voluntold. Excellent.
That's it.
So tell me how exciting and how purposeful is SuperTech?
SuperTech is a competition for professional diesel truck technicians.
Uh-huh.
It was started by the Professional Technician Development Committee, which is a task force within the TMC, the Technology Maintenance Council, which is part of the American Trucking Association. A group of folks were working for a couple years trying to set up a national competition to recognize technicians. And in a meeting, they agreed they wanted to move forward and they needed somebody to run it. And two of my friends said, we got just the guy. And I got a phone call and they said, we got something for you to do. And it's been a labor of love. But when I took the position, we wanted to recognize the technicians, which I wanted to do too. But the other piece that I wanted to be able to do was provide feedback to the individual technicians and the industry on the strengths and areas of improvement of each of our competitors, either individually or collectively, to see where we were as an industry. And so we're a Skills USA competition for big kids. And everything we do in our competition is the job that they do every day on the job. It's process and procedure, whether it's OEM process and procedure or TMC's recommended practice. So we're actually grading them on the process and procedure in about 34 different items. And when the competition is over, we have a score sheet for every technician on how they scored in each one of the stations, which are all on a 100-point scale, except for the ASE test, which has a 3-time multiplier. And then, so they know what they're good at and where they need improvement. And one of the things that I constantly get from the technicians when they're done at the end of the second day, they go, you know, I'm worn out. I can't wait to come back next year, but I learned a lot about myself. And that's really powerful. And then many of the major fleets that send 8, 9, 10, or 15 technicians, they take all the scores from those guys and look at them. And if there's a trend where there's an area of weakness or area of improvement in certain skill sets with these guys who were the best of the best that they brought from their company, you know the other 99.9% they left home probably need help in that area. So it helps them with budgeting for training. It helps them focus the training in a rifle effect instead of a shotgun. And we've been able to take an industry and really turn the industry that looks at everything we do in SuperTech and kind of put a grade to it and an evaluation, whether it's individually or collectively. And then at our annual meeting, we take all of our data, which is compiled by ASE, and we give out a report on where we are in each one of the areas and a bell curve of what went on in that workstation. So it's powerful information. So instead of just recognizing the technicians for the job they do and giving them all these great awards that they deserve and throwing all this data away, we capture the data every year, analyze it, and say, hey, this is a potential concern. And a lot of times we create workstations around industry concerns, or I call them pain points. If everybody's having problems with this, let's create a workstation and figure out where the disconnect is, and then we can get them the training that they need to adjust.
How do the participants qualify to come and participate in Super Wrench?
Super Tech.
Super Tech.
Yeah, many ways. You can sign up and just come on your own, or your company can sponsor you, or your company had their own internal competition and you've been chosen to come and represent them. But 25 of the state trucking associations have maintenance councils that have their own competition. If you win a state maintenance council competition, you come to SuperTech as their winner and they pay for you, and you're automatically grandfathered into the second day of the competition. So even if you do bad on the first day, you get to compete on the second day. We start with about 150, and on the second day, we drop down to about 119. But you're automatically grandfathered no matter how good or bad you did because you were a state winner. So they come from all different walks of life, dealers, independents, shops, fleets, you name it. Postal Service.
Excellent. You said learn about themselves. That was big takeaway. What are you actually learning about that fact?
One of our technicians that won Super Tech years back, his name is Christopher Tate, an incredible individual. He is a transport refrigeration technician in New York. And that's what he does all day long. But over the years competing in Super Tech, each year he goes through the workstations and he learned things that he didn't know. And then he went back to work and he invested in training to get better. And about 6 years ago, he won the whole competition. And it really goes to show that these guys are true professionals and they're going to invest in their knowledge and skills, whether their employer supports them or not. And that's very powerful. Now, many of the employers do, and many of the employers invest major dollars in training because they can relate it to cost savings and repairs and downtime. But we have some individuals that just take it upon themselves and go after it. And there's a lot to be said about that, too.
Excellent. Are you a ASE subject matter expert?
I'm a ASE certified technician.
Okay.
I have some certifications in automotive, some in medium heavy duty truck, light duty and heavy duty parts, and service consultant. I figured if I'm going to preach this thing, I better have the patch to go with it.
So you work with NATEF.
Mm-hmm.
George, what's a recommendation that you may have recently given to them?
NATEF is in the process of revisiting its evaluation team leader training. And it's going to be a more comprehensive training to update the current evaluation team leaders to the new standards and process, and then also to assist with online training along with instructor-led training for new evaluation team leaders around the country. And so part of my responsibility was to provide some input, listen, and then work with that piece there. I'm working with them right now. The medium heavy duty truck task list is up for revision the end of the first quarter. And what we're doing is we've created a survey with the help of Aaron Brennan with Cengage, who is the curriculum chair of one of our TMC task forces. And we created a a survey that's going to go out to all the TMC members, ask them if they're a fleet independent, whether they're a dealer, and some other questions. And then they're going to go through the NATEF task list, and we're going to ask them to pick those tasks that they would like to have in an entry-level technician. And so there's going to be some recommendations that are going to come from industry to NATEF. So when they sit down and do their revisions, their three-day revisions at the end of March, there's going to be a tremendous industry input into what skill sets they feel are important. One of the questions in the survey is the one that we talked about earlier. Do you have a shortage of applicants, or do you have a shortage of qualified applicants? We're really looking to see how that is scored. And I think I already know the answer, but I want to be able to validate it.
Got it. Excellent point. Thank you so much. You and I were chatting, and you said that there's about 60% of the need of graduates into the program, into any program, automotive, diesel, mechanics, because we need to replace people that are either leaving, retiring, or moving on.
Correct.
And you had mentioned that, and I'm not sure if this was automotive or if this was heavy duty, that between 2014 and 2024, we're going to need about 8,000 technicians?
No, it's 76,900 on the truck side. The Department of Labor has a six-digit code for every occupation in this country. And the occupation code for diesel technician, I think, is 49-3031. And from new positions and replacement, the number is, I think, 76,900. But 60% of that is actually replacement. New position is somebody adds a second shift. They add three bays to the shop. That's a new position. Everything else, retired, quit, died, got run over, got promoted, gave up, whatever. That's the replacement. I think on the automotive side, it's 237,000 total. I can get you the exact numbers and the link. The biggest one in the transportation area that we have to fear is truck drivers. That's over 400,000 in the next 10 years. The average age of a truck driver, they say, is like 55 years old.
You know, that really astounds me. Because I remember reading a story about Walmart, of all people, and, you know,
great company.
About, yeah, and their systems and their processes
are incredible.
And one of the most astounding facts that I pulled from this book was that 2/3 of Walmart's goods are always on the road.
Yes. They have,
and when there's not going to be any drivers, we're going to be. Are we going to have long lines at the stores?
Well, Walmart is a big participant in SuperTech and in TMC, and they're truly their transportation side is an amazing organization. I think they have about 6,000 tractors and 55,000 trailers. So you talk about a company that's moving a lot of stuff on their own, plus, you know, third-party people that are moving their stuff. So, yeah, a lot of their stuff is somewhere between their distribution systems, the docks, or the manufacturer, or the stores. So they got a lot of stuff in transit every day.
It's amazing, George. We're in the transportation business. I mean, like it or not, you know, our cars don't move unless the trucks bring us stuff. And I'm so glad you're on the show because, you know, I do an automotive style show. And right. I kept thinking, is my listener going to love what you have to say? I think they're going to love what you have to say because they're hooked at the hip.
Well, I spoke in Washington, D.C. last week. I was on a panel discussion, and when it came up, everyone in the room was, you know, college degree, professional, consultant, whatever. And I said, what you don't realize is the transportation industry affects you directly and indirectly every day. If you own a car, we're direct. I said, but whatever you're wearing, whatever you ate for lunch, you know, whatever you do every day, at one point or another, was moved by a truck. And there's thousands and thousands of professional truck technicians out there every day working to maintain these trucks so that they go up and down the road safely. So people that don't know each other don't meet in the dark of the night. And we take that for granted. Professional technicians just don't repair cars and trucks. They make the highway safer for each and every one of us that go up and down the road every day.
On both sides of the coin.
Yep.
All right. Well, look, we finally hooked up. I am happy to have you. You're doing so many great things for our industry. You're a passionate guy, obviously very articulate. No wonder why you're talking everywhere. Any final great words of wisdom to leave to our listener?
The only thing I want to say is please get involved. At this point in my career, I'm giving back to an industry that's been very good to me, and somebody's paying me to do it. I'd probably do it anyway. But each and every one of us that are in this industry, we need to get involved and let either education or other folks know what it is that we need from an entry-level person in this industry, and so that we give every young person who's chosen our potential path, career path, has the opportunity for success. You know, and a lot of times we're going to influence the lives of people we're never going to meet. So it's just important that we just get involved. An hour and a half, twice a year, with your local school. That's all it takes.
Hey, thanks for your expertise and wisdom.
I appreciate it. Thanks for your time, and truly glad we finally were able to hook up.
Okay, George. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hey, aftermarketers, thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to George Ahrens for sharing his wisdom and insights. He had so much to say. I hope you got it all. Get more information on George and the episode's key talking points at remarkableresults.biz/E191. What is nice is that all episodes are on demand. Now, that means you can listen anytime on many internet sites like iTunes, Google Play, and my own smart device app. Just search for Remarkable Results Radio on the App Store. Hey, any questions or comments? Email me at carm@remarkableresults.biz or head over to the contact page on my website. Now, I get emails weekly, and it's always nice to hear from you. Remember my role. I'm a person who links people like you that need and want knowledge in a way that's easy to digest in their day-to-day life. And that's why you're here. So share this content-rich resource with your friend. There's a lot to go around. Now, it's easy. Email the episode link. Share my Facebook page, Twitter account, or LinkedIn connection. The richness grows because you help ripple the water. Hey, I'm grateful and thankful for your support. Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.